Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hello, listeners. This is your host, Carly and Allie, for episode number 31.
Hey, guys.
Today, we're going to be talking all about the difference between ketosis and low glycemic eating. And I think sometimes there's confusion, especially among our clients, when we're talking about the difference, just to figure out, well, what is low carb versus very low carb versus low glycemic. So we want to clarify a lot of this blood sugar talk to you all and figure out what works best.
And, you know, the whole practice and our optimal eating focus uses a low glycemic type protocol. But I think the confusion lies when people in our clinic do our ketogenic program and then they transition out and then they want to maintain some of the behaviors of the ketogenic program, yet are not in ketosis. So we're going to add some light and clarity today to some of the things that work against you when you are low glycemic, and some of the things that work for you while in ketosis, and vice versa. And you'll notice even with your macronutrients, carbs, proteins, and fats, there's going to be a variance of which one is the driving composition of your calorie intake, which one is the most limited, and how those nutrients interact. As well as, I think the big crux that my clients also see is that they want to dibble and dabble in ketogenic diet, and that's something that we've discussed in past episodes that we do not recommend. You know, so we're talking about it takes 3 days to get into a ketogenic transition of the body, actually using ketone bodies as fuel. So ketosis is not something that I recommend doing 5 days a week and then off on the weekend having a flatbread or an indulgence of a sweet treat and too much wine or something like that. It's really important that you commit. And we're seeing more and more research that maintaining keto adaptation and staying in a ketogenic diet for more of a lifestyle is absolutely appropriate. So again, the big things we're going to focus on today is what tools of a ketogenic diet can you continue with when you're low glycemic, and which ones do you have to use only when in ketosis? And then really defining the differences of the two so that you can determine which one's a better fit for you and your lifestyle and know how you can ebb and flow in and out of them and appropriate ways to do so.
Yes. And at any point, if you all want more information about ketosis, we have 2 full podcasts just talking about ketosis, episodes 14 and 15. So we'll go into lots of details there if, you know, we're going to be talking about it a lot today, but probably not in as much depth as prior.
Right. And then there is a webinar if you really want to kind of delve into and learn more. We do have under our virtual learning a webinar on ketosis as well. And that's more of a foundational element if you're looking to jump into it. And in the new year, in 2017, depending on when you're listening to this, in the spring, we will be launching a virtual ketosis group, which we're super excited about. So even if you listen to this episode and you want to be added to the interest list, just shoot us an email in the Allie, contact us, ask Allie form on our podcast bar, and we'll be sure to include you. So before we get into all of the nitty-gritty details, let's have a word from our sponsor. I'm really excited to tell you about some of the superfood ingredients available from Perfect Supplements. Gelatin is one of the highlights of their product line, and it's something that I use on a regular basis and love the fact that Perfect Bovine Gelatin is sourced from 100% pasture-raised, grass-fed, non-GMO cattle, with no hormones, synthetics, or pesticides.
I agree. When I'm burnt out from bone broth, I really love making gelatin treats. The Perfect Bovine Gelatin is a really great way to go. My other favorite is when I travel, I take a couple of packets of the Perfect Hydrolyzed Collagen. I love the fact that they offer the single serving packets of 100% grass-fed collagen. It's made of 90% protein, tasteless, and completely dissolves in any liquid. I love adding it to my iced coffee in the morning when I travel. It's just easy, maybe a splash of almond milk at the coffee bar in the airport, and it keeps me satisfied until I land and can get a balanced meal.
As a way to introduce Perfect Supplements to all of you guys in my audience, we have an exclusive coupon to share with you all for 10% off of any order. Visit perfectsupplements.com and enter the coupon code ALI10, that's A-L-I in caps, 10, at checkout, and you'll save 10% on their whole product line, which includes superfoods, the collagen, aquatic greens, and more. Also, you can visit our podcast page and find the Perfect Supplements link under this episode, which will lead you to their whole line of superfoods.
The gelatin and collagen especially are great for gut restoration, which we've talked about in a couple of our episodes. So make sure to check it out and use code ALI10. Let's first start off by defining low glycemic. That's kind of a term we've been throwing around already, and I just want to clarify for everyone what low glycemic means and if it can be used interchangeably with low carb or if that's a different conversation.
Sure. So the glycemic index is looking at, from foods that are consumed, how quickly they spike your blood sugar levels. And so when we're talking about a food that is high glycemic, that means based on what you consume, how rapidly the glucose is going to be released into the bloodstream. A low glycemic food typically is going to be more fibrous. Those fibers or non-digestible compounds slow down your ability to break down the carbohydrates into glucose. And so the glycemic index is based on, as a marker, white bread. And white bread is going to be higher glycemic index than wheat bread. So we thought, because of the fiber roll. Now, there's a little bit of a caveat within that, because there's some research that shows that our salivary amylase, or the saliva enzymes, actually accelerate the breakdown of the gliadin, or the wheat protein, and might actually enhance or accelerate the glucose response, which is some of the theory behind things like wheat belly. And I've seen that personally with diabetic patients, actually, back in the day, 15 years ago or so, you know, recommending things like whole wheat pasta to replace the white pasta, and actually seeing their blood sugar not have a beneficial change. So the concept of glycemic index and fiber is one element, but being mindful of what's making that fiber, that's why we don't recommend whole wheat products and generally are gluten-free in our recommendations, to keep both inflammation down and also that glycemic index in check. So non-wheat-based fibers are going to help. So this is now a better example would be like a sweet potato, which is a resistant starch because of its fibrous compounds. It's going to be much more low glycemic than something like maple syrup, which is going to be more of a refined sweetener. And then taking that a step further with low glycemic eating, we want to always balance our carbohydrate choices, and we want to consume them in their most whole food forms for that fiber. We want to combine those carb choices with a protein or a healthy fat. And fats actually more directly blunt the glycemic influence. So roasting those sweet potato chunks in coconut oil or ghee is going to further lower that glycemic index, because the fat is going to slow down the ability of the digestive system to break down those carbohydrates.
So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. You can have a low carb, low glycemic diet.
Yes.
Or you can have a low glycemic food, but you're eating so much of it, it's not any longer a low carb diet.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And same thing. I think you can even eat a low carb diet, but have high glycemic options. Right. Like, you know, you can stay within a certain gram, and the word low carb doesn't define by any particular gram restriction, you know, but, you know, you could still have a refined sugar in a low carb diet if you're not eating carbs at other meals. But that's not the way we'd recommend. We recommend a low carb, low glycemic diet actually for most patients. Unless they're really a high-performance athlete, and even some of them can do things ketogenically.
For sure. Okay, let's start the conversation by talking about glucose. This is the body's primary and often preferred source of fuel. So let's kind of just talk about, Allie, go through how the body responds when we eat some sort of exogenous or from outside the body sugar. And then we'll kind of get into the details if we go without eating, how the body can still produce sugar, et cetera. But let's start with the glucose conversation before we talk about ketosis.
Yeah. So glucose is the primary fuel source of the body, like you said, Carly. And we metabolize a lot of glucose by our brain and then throughout the systems of our body. All carbohydrates break down to glucose. And so whether it is a starchy vegetable, a grain, a legume, a fruit, carbohydrates are also in sweeteners, of course. And then like liquid dairy that has lactose is going to have carbohydrates in there. And then, of course, a whole gamut of your processed foods are going to be very laden in carbohydrates. But all carbohydrates break down into glucose. And glucose is regulated by the pancreas and the liver. So the pancreas regulates glucose both when eating and when not. The pancreas is going to release insulin, which is that known hormone that we think of with diabetics. Insulin is released when glucose spikes in the body. And insulin works like a lock and key mechanism to bring that glucose in the bloodstream into the cells of the body to be utilized as fuel. So the pancreas regulates the glucose or the blood sugar with insulin when the glucose is high. And the pancreas also regulates blood sugar with glucagon when the blood sugar drops too low. And glucagon is a hormone just like insulin, but works in its opposing way. Glucagon, I always remembered studying from, it sounds like glucose is gone. Mm-hmm. And that actually stimulates gluconeogenesis, or the production of sugar made by the liver. So for an example, after your meals, every time you eat, assuming that there's some form of carbohydrate in your meal, you are going to respond with insulin release from the pancreas, and that's going to play a role with how your body metabolizes or uses that blood sugar. Insulin is pro-inflammatory, and so too high of a carbohydrate meal is going to release excessive insulin, and that's going to tell the body to store that sugar or glucose as fat, as the additional storage. When you're sleeping or when you're skipping meals, let's say it's a stressful day or you're running errands or you're distracted, your pancreas is going to release that glucagon, and that's going to tell the liver to make sugar. And the primary source of body fuel that makes sugar is actually muscle, the glycogen storage in the muscle. So it's important to distinguish this as we go further down the rabbit hole, because when you skip meals and you're using glucose as fuel, you are setting your body up for muscle wasting and for lowering your metabolism, because your metabolism is regulated by the pounds of muscle on your body and then, of course, your vital organ activity. But when you're skipping meals but yet not keto-adapted and using glucose as fuel, you're constantly taking from that glycogen muscle storage and metabolizing that into sugar to keep you from going too hypoglycemic or too low of a blood sugar drop, which would be a risk for health concerns and overall organ function.
And this is a perfect example of why it doesn't work to just not eat. It's not a calories in, calories out conversation. If you're not eating, your body is trying to put on the reserves. You're no longer in a metabolic mode and you're dumping sugar in your blood and you're lowering your metabolism, like Allie said. So,
and that's, I think, why a lot of us have heard probably, you know, from like maybe your personal trainer or a nutritionist of some sort, eat every 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And you know, we generally, again, with optimal eating constructs, recommend that. But there's a whole large population of our practice that is keto adapted, and they actually get to break that rule.
Yeah, so there's this glucose conversation. We're eating glucose, and if we're not eating glucose, there's still sugar in the blood. And that's because glucose is the primary source of fuel. So let's talk, we'll kind of toggle back and forth through this conversation to paint the picture, but let's talk about fat as a primary source of fuel and just maybe keto in a nutshell, Allie, without going too far.
I like how you prime me like that. Keep them down. The difference of the main metabolic shift that occurs in ketosis is that after 3 days, as I mentioned, it takes 3 days. Everyone's different. Some people 48 hours, but generally speaking, 3 days for the body to transition and learn how to use the fat storage on the body as fuel. And in that sense, the liver transitions, because it basically, when you go ketogenic, you starve your body from carbohydrates, which starves the body from glucose. And in that process, and that's why some people call it keto flu and things like that, of getting into ketosis, your blood sugar is kind of dancing back and forth, and that poor liver and pancreas are trying to compensate and make more glucose spilling and get your body adapted. Well, eventually, just like a sponge, it's going to wring out, and you're going to remove all of that glucose as fuel, and the body has to turn to an alternative mechanism. So during this, it's going to actually convert your body's fat as fuel in the production of ketone bodies. So the liver can go through gluconeogenesis to make glucose, or it can go through ketone production once it's been depleted of glucose for at least a 2 to 3 day period. So once you become keto adapted, or really get into the metabolic shift of starving off those carbohydrates from your body, your body will take from the fat stores versus from the muscle, because your muscle and the glycogen stores in your muscle are not used to make ketone bodies. The body fat and the lipid storage is actually used as a driver down the production pathway of making ketone bodies. So that's metabolically where the calorie restriction can actually maintain your metabolism, because you're not going into the muscle as fuel. And that's also where infrequent eating, or actually using fasting as a tool, can be of your benefit. Because if you're eating high fat, very, very low carb, and ketosis is usually less than 30 grams or more, only coming from residual carb sources. So those carb foods I listed, the beans, the sweet potatoes, even quote unquote good carbs, are all eliminated during the ketosis type of approach, because again, you have to starve the body off from that glucose. So once the body is starved off and able to produce ketone bodies, the production of ketone bodies actually utilizes the body's fat store as fuel in doing so.
So that's, you know, one huge difference that we're already highlighting, is that low glycemic or low carb eating, or just even the standard American diet eating, if you're not eating frequently, it's going to cause an issue. And fasting, yes, is not so beneficial.
And I think that's the number one issue I see with clients, because everyone loves the, you know, keto coffee or bulletproof coffee. And I think a lot of us feel like we're forcing eating, which that's a whole other conversation to have as far as what is optimal within that. But a lot of I've heard feedback, and personally I can understand the experience of feeling like, oh man, I have to eat so frequently and I'm not even hungry. A lot of people enjoy that idea of having that keto coffee or bulletproof coffee and maybe fasting until noon. But if you aren't keto adapted and you're using the glucose as fuel, you're actually dumping that glycogen, especially if you exercise then on an empty stomach, that further metabolizes that glycogen fuel source from the muscle. And that actually goes into more muscle wasting, especially injury, add insult to injury, if you don't have protein recovery after your workout.
Yeah. So while we're on the topic, let's quickly talk about the benefits of fasting in ketosis, so people can see that it is beneficial when it's done correctly.
Yeah. So when we're talking about fasting with ketosis, and I mean, Jimmy Moore is an expert. He's right now on I think day 11 of doing, yeah, a 21-day fast. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Keto Clarity, and also I believe it's called Cholesterol Clarity.
I'm not sure. I know he co-authored a cookbook on ketosis too.
Yes. So he's really a big guru in tapping into the world of fasting with ketosis. So definitely a good resource to check out. It's Living La Vida Low Carb as the podcast. Yes, when you are keto adapted, we do intermittent fasting in our protocols, where clients are going at least 16-hour increments without food. And so that typically looks like 8 p.m. to noon for most individuals. And what that does is, as the body's adapted to using ketone bodies as fuel, it drives the body further into the fat stores as a survival mechanism to use fuel source for the body and brain. And so in that process, we're actually metabolizing more body fat and getting deeper into ketosis during the fasting. And so that's where fasting becomes appropriate. Once you are adapted, you can use the fasting for 3 days in a row, which is recommended, or even longer periods of time. That can be done every day. Or as you advance into really a keto-adapted lifestyle where you're successfully maintaining ketogenic, you may be able to go multiple days of periods of time of using that body fat reserves as your ketone fuel. And we see many benefits to fasting. A lot of cognitive improvement can be seen as far as healthy aging support. There's some cutting-edge research on Alzheimer's disease showing those amyloid plaques in the brain, the tarry-like sugary plaques in the brain, actually reducing that plaque formation through extensive fasting, because the body will lubricate more in the brain with those ketone bodies, which is that same concept of the ketone bodies helping with seizure treatment as well. But furthermore, with an anti-aging and cognitive, there's a protective mechanism that goes on in the brain when we do both the fasting and the ketosis. That starvation even accelerates the cell mechanism regeneration. We also see improvements in our blood sugar regulation. We've actually seen insulin resistance become more sensitivity towards insulin, and that's due to the metabolism of the fat. So we have different forms of fat in the body. We have the visceral fat, which is closest to the organs, and the subcutaneous fat. This does help to metabolize both. And so reducing that body fat helps with insulin sensitivity. And it also can reduce our fasting glucose, because the liver isn't dumping that glycogen or making that gluconeogenesis. The liver isn't monitoring the glucose as much. And so a lot of beneficial, we can see the fasting helping with cardiometabolic syndrome and diabetes, as well as regulation with cognition and brain function, memory, brain fog. We can also see a huge improvement with hormonal health, especially in the PCOS population, because a lot of times women with PCOS have high DHEA, and DHEA is used as an intermediary builder to produce ketone bodies. So the fasting further accelerates the need to produce ketones in that survival mechanism, and that can help to reset hormonal balance and improve fertility.
So you can see why, you know, I feel like some of these podcasts, we talk about ketosis a lot, and obviously if you've listened to them, you know I'm a huge fan. But now you can see why clinically this conversation comes up a lot. Who are the sick people in our offices? They're dealing with inflammation, they're dealing with high blood sugar, dysmetabolic disease, hormonal imbalance, cognitive dysfunction, keto. And it's not a one-size-fits-all, sure. There are people that it's not appropriate for, but it really does help with a lot of things, and especially that inflammation piece. I mean, inflammation being the root cause of so many chronic illnesses, that can help really address a widespread of diseases and imbalances.
And connecting further, you know, we just came out with our Beat the Bloat ebook, which we're really excited about, and that's the constructs of a 10-week gut reset for a yeast cleanse and even other forms of dysbiosis. And, you know, within that, you have to starve off. You have to remove the bacteria by starving off the fuel source. And the primary fuel source are the long-chain carbohydrates that get fermented, as well as refined sugars, which feed yeast. And we know that if we've ever made bread, you know, you take that active yeast, water, and sugar, and it goes haywire. And that's the same type of reaction that can occur in the body. So this type of a approach can reset your microbiome as well, which I think is another driver, just like inflammation, of whole body health, and opens a whole door of dermatological concerns, and also mood stability. Things like anxiety and depression can really be addressed by that.
And Allie, for those who haven't necessarily heard the Optimal Eating or a couple other podcasts, let's just quickly go over what is an optimal range of carbohydrates for men and women who are not ketogenic, just looking for a balanced, low glycemic, low carb approach.
Sure. So when we're talking about, and what's really interesting is my approach throughout the grid is going to be low carb, as far as especially comparing to the standard American diet. And so when we're looking at, for instance, even like with gestational diabetics, We are commonly recommending below the general recommendations through governmental guidelines on how many carbohydrates are needed. And that's because we see the deleterious or harmful influence that excessive glucose in the body can drive, as well as excessive carbohydrates. And we also know that by keeping carbohydrates in check, you're going to limit a lot of the processed refined foods. So there's definitely a dual approach there. So generally speaking, for women, we're talking somewhere between 45 to 90 grams of carbohydrates, and for men, somewhere between 60 to 120. This is our definition of low glycemic intake. And so when we're talking about that in an example day, all of our exchanges that we use follow the diabetic exchanges, which are 15 grams of carbs equals a carb serving. So for ladies, that would say that they get about 3 to 5 carbohydrate choices in the day to stay within that range. And generally speaking, based on your gram of carb range, I recommend keeping your food exchange one lower than that, because you will get residual carbohydrates that will add up in your day-to-day. So even of what we call non-starchy vegetables, which includes things like bell peppers, asparagus, leafy greens, zucchini, summer squash, that whole category of foods are not starchy vegetables like the sweet potato or the carrots or the beets, which are higher carb, but they still will have about 5 to even upwards of 8 to 10 grams of carb per serving. So generally speaking, for the ladies that want to stay more 45 to 60 at the lower end of that range, they want to choose between 2 to 3 carb choices a day. So they might do like a egg frittata for breakfast. So maybe it's like, or scramble would be an easier way to describe. So if it's 2 to 3 scrambled eggs with maybe some avocado slices on top, and that's sauteed with some broccoli and cheddar cheese, that could be breakfast. Then the snack could be some Greek yogurt with maybe a half cup of raspberries. Then their lunch may have like our kale cannellini salad. So maybe it's leafy green base, but it has about a half cup of white beans and some skipjack tuna for protein on there. And then maybe another snack is a apple with raw aged Gouda. And then the dinner is going to be a pan-seared sirloin steak with some grilled and roasted veggies and a 4 to 6 ounce glass of wine. That already is looking like about a 60 gram of carb day, because we had the apple, the raspberries, we had the wine, and I may have thrown, and the beans. Mm-hmm. And the raspberries I didn't use a full cup of, you know, so I mean, give or take, but I think that that's going to be about a 60 gram of carb day, just to visually see that. And you'll hear that there were no grains in there. It's also following mostly the paleo-like approach to the diet. However, I do incorporate some of the dairy foods in there. But that's generally speaking how I define optimal balanced eating and how I kind of pilot. Now, maybe you want to give an example of a keto day, just to kind of allow listeners to hear them mirrored back and forth, and maybe how Carly lives her day.
Sure.
That's just kind of a back and forth. That'd be a good example.
So probably keto coffee in the morning, absolutely. Or otherwise, if it's not a fasting day, then some hard-boiled eggs. Those are my quick on the go, too. I would say lunch, because you don't have to have that mid-morning snacks. You can go a little bit further when you're in ketosis. Could be some sort of, I always do, my favorite would be just a protein cheese vegetable casserole. I make this really good cheesy chicken spinach kind of casserole. It's all in one dish, pretty easy, but it sneaks in veggies. And then mid-afternoon, this is really weird. What I've been doing lately is cubes of cheese dipped in almond butter. There's just like something about the salty and the sweet. I know that's weird. It's new.
I'll try it. I won't knock it yet.
It's new. I'm not knocking it. And then dinner is similar to lunch. I'll probably have some bone broth, sipping on bone broth while I cook dinner. That's been my new thing for when I'm really hungry. And then a big old salad with maybe a burger patty on it, some cheese, and some bell peppers.
Just thinking burger bowl.
It's just so easy. I know I talked about it before. But that 3 o'clock snack, I'm usually hungry and I'll listen to my hunger then, but that's when it becomes individualized, because you're not having to be on the clock,
right?
Low glycemic, where you could every 3 hours
frozen macadamia nuts at that time, mm-hmm. or just some briny olives or something like that. I think that Carly is enjoying cheese right now. So she had it all three meals or whatever.
Oh, did I? I didn't even notice.
But yeah, I mean, so that's not necessary as an element as well. You can do keto dairy free, absolutely, and just do more like nuts and, like I said, briny foods. But you didn't hear any fruits, of course, was a big difference.
Right.
You didn't hear the beans.
Apple.
And
yeah, you said fruits. No wine.
So those are the variances. And then I think she outlined a lot. The timing is going to be different. And more fats, right? So her day had fat added to her coffee and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the variances of the macronutrients, we talk about this in our ketosis webinar, is that actually, although protein does not have carbohydrates in it, too much protein can kick you out of ketosis. And that's an important thing to distinguish as well.
Absolutely. I wanted to bring that up because a lot of people like to talk about macros. Like, what are your macros? What are the percents? And I don't know about you, but I toggle back and forth. I only really talk in percent sometimes because if you're working out a ton, then, you know, 50% protein is just, it could transaminate into sugar. It could be way too much.
Yes, I agree.
So I think those macros, people get really caught up in that. That's kind of a trend. I know bodybuilders use
it
them.
Is. Yeah.
But it's not necessarily right. And you really have to go back and forth between the grams and take into account your lifestyle and what your goals are.
Mm-hmm. And monitor your body, of course. And but generally speaking, in a low glycemic diet, you're going to be eating more high protein, moderate fat, low moderate carb. And the reason for that is that, again, you want to replete the muscle storage because the muscle is the primary fuel source of sugar other than carbohydrates. And so that's the timestamp when we're really looking at, okay, are you getting ample protein, especially post-workout? Are you getting ample, which is important in keto too, but in keto, you're not draining the glycogen as much. You are using the amino acids from using protein as far of your muscle breakdown as far as like resistance and lifting. So you still need to replete the branched chain amino acids, but it's not as severe as of the depletion in the muscle as you get when you are not keto adapted or you're in a typical optimal eating or low glycemic type approach is when you really need more protein recovery focus.
Mm-hmm.
So protein is going to be higher in a low glycemic diet because you're using glucose as fuel. So you're not worried about that transamination and that fancy word basically means the body can convert the protein into sugar. And it's that same process of that gluconeogenesis type of process in the liver. So in a low glycemic diet, you want higher protein to replenish the muscle stores and keep your metabolism elevated. You want to have moderate fat because you're not metabolizing fat as your body's fuel source as rapidly as you are in ketosis. And then you want moderate to low carbohydrate. In a ketosis setting, you want to be high fat. So if you were talking percent, it is about like 70% of fat of your mm-hmm. makeup typically. But I agree, grams are better. And then you're going to be going more of a moderate protein. Generally speaking, women in a ketogenic diet, we try to keep around 60 to 75 grams of protein. Men can go a little bit higher, but any beyond really 100 grams, you're going to start to see in men, more like over 85 in women, you're going to start to convert that protein into sugar. So we actually watched that in the ketosis, and fat makeup is going to be substantially probably a 10 to 20 gram variance of change from a keto versus a low glycemic,
mm-hmm.
lower in the low glycemic.
And I just wanted to call out, I think we've used the term fat adapted a couple times. Do you just want to kind of talk about what we mean when we say that for
yeah.
keto?
So keto adapted or fat adapted. I think it's defined in the community. Maybe you'll be better at hitting this than I, but my perception of that is that concept that it's taking at least 72 hours to get into ketosis, to make ketone bodies as your fuel source, to really wring out the glucose as fuel. So at least 3 days in, but a lot of people use keto adapted more as weeks in, where you're actually seeing increased ketone body production. Now, whether you're seeing that on your urinary strip is controversial because it's not the best marker. It's looking at a solute in your urine. And so that's not necessarily an indicator of if you're keto adapted. I think it's more of the symptom shifts, the hunger shifts, the metabolic shifts, and the body composition shifts.
Yeah, I think the symptom shifts puts the nail on the head because a couple weeks in, your body is more, I guess, used to using fat as fuel and you're not going through what we call the keto flu. You're not feeling right. weak and tired. And a lot of those things people are going through when you're first trying a ketogenic diet. So fat adaption just means, I think you can even start to get to ketosis a little bit faster because your body's kind of just, I guess, teed up to utilize that fat a little bit easier.
What do you mean faster? Faster than the two-day period?
Than the three-day period.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You mean once you've done it historically yes. in your body?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I also think along those lines that when we're talking about that adaptation and that shift, like Carly said, the first couple weeks, mind you that as you dabble in and play with how ketosis is experienced in your body, you're going to have some oops times and you're going to see that you can kick yourself out with almond butter, or mm-hmm. you're going to see that you can kick yourself out with that excess protein or with too many slices of bell peppers, which are okay or allowed, but in a certain amount of restriction. So when we start the kickoff, we try to stay very structured and we incorporate that fasting. And we also keep the non-starchy vegetables even to a restriction of a half cup, focusing on 3 cups of leafy greens. And that's a half cup throughout that day, which sounds like really not a lot of vegetables, because until your body really gets adapted, mm-hmm. can you tolerate and metabolize some of those a little bit more liberally?
Right.
Otherwise, your body's going to want to go and make sugar as quick as it can.
Absolutely. So let's kind of just do a recap. I kind of want to start off by just talking about who we think should try keto versus low glycemic. I know in my head, I like to always start low glycemic. This is a question for anybody. Where are you now? Are right. you the standard American diet eating 300 plus grams of carb? Don't go keto.
Right.
Right?
300 to 60 is a huge step down.
Yes. So where are you right now? Do you need to focus on just cleaning up your diet? Get rid of the processed stuff and not really count carbs, because it's really all about baby steps. So once you're eating cleaner, then you can start to reel it in and say, okay, let's really see how much fruit I'm eating now that fruit has replaced bread.
Right, right.
And then we can say,
let's start to be mindful of what carbs are.
Right.
And identify them and how my body feels mm-hmm. when I consume carbohydrates at my meals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like to reserve ketosis for the people who, a 55-year-old woman who has tried every single diet and she's tried low carb and it doesn't work for her and she's frustrated and she's having hormonal imbalances. I was like, you know what? You're doing great. We can be more aggressive. Let's try ketosis.
And what types of things do you think? Is that because that woman that's low carb is eating too much protein? Or what types of things do you think need to be tweaked or adjusted to kind of move her into the sweet spot?
You know, I think a lot of people like all or nothing and mm-hmm. they like structure. So those people who are eating low carb aren't really eating as low carb as they think.
Yeah.
And so this is a way for them to say, okay, let's just get rid of all of it and see how my body responds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you never really know. They come in saying they're eating low carb, but I don't really know what that means.
And I think also if you're eating just low carb and you're incorporating processed foods still, like mm-hmm. Atkins bars or things with sugar alcohols mm-hmm. Or the non-caloric sweeteners, like even diet sodas and such, that doesn't allow you to break up with sugar truly. And so those people are typically having a rebound, like a cheat day. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're also beyond the metabolic shifts, they're not capitalizing on a ketogenic type of a lifestyle.
Right. So there's, I think, and I like to tell people too, everybody has a different sensitivity to carbohydrates. I'm not yes. going to throw someone into a ketogenic diet that will have great results going low carb. Why would I do that? You know what I mean? Unless there's some other therapeutic reason. But there are some people that are just more sensitive. And I think everyone has to just take their body and stop comparing it to everyone else's and just figure out what really resonates with you, what makes you feel your best. And I like having ketogenic in the pocket for those people that aren't getting results, but it's not where we start. We just talk about it a lot because it's,
right.
you know, flashy and new.
Well, it is. I think it's a good tool. And I mean, I think that you get a cognitive shift. And I think that's the biggest change that I note mm-hmm. within clients and their outcomes is that they feel grounded. And I think that it gives you that boost and the strength to stay on a clean eating path. And that's mm-hmm. the really important thing. And I think just to be said on the other end of the spectrum, whereas, like I was saying about the Atkins bars and whatnot, just the term keto is different than the way that we use naturally nourished approaches of ketosis. And our approach with food as medicine, very different than doing, like I said, a lot of the blogs and things you'll see will have things like fat bombs, which are made with butter and coconut oil, but then they add in like the sugar-free syrups from coffee bars mm-hmm. and different really processed compounds that have added colors or flavor enhancers and things like that, that to me are excitatory for the system and toxic to the system and are not healing to the system. So going, if you're going keto in that way and you feel like you need those processed refined foods, you might be better choosing low glycemic and having some raspberries or having some sweet potato or having some real food to satiate those cravings if you feel that you can't make that transition.
It's such a good point. There's a couple, you know, people I follow on Instagram that do keto, and one lady will make this plate of cheese with pepperonis on top and she'll just broil it. And so it's just like the topping of a pizza. But these are like Walmart bought pepperoni slices.
Yeah. And the really, quality of protein, yeah, I think, is so huge too.
I guess we always assume that people listening to this podcast are just the cleanest eaters and they know it, but that is so, so important to talk about.
Right. When we're talking about fighting against cancer and hormonal balance, eating dairy that has recumbent growth hormone or eating the meats with the nitrites and things like that is not going to be therapeutic for the body. Right. That becomes macros go out the door, ketosis goes out the door, and even low glycemic goes out the door, and you start first with quality. So I think that's a good thing to hopefully summarize this episode with, is start first with quality.
Yes.
And then see and learn about your definition of what a carb is, because I think that's central to management of not only weight loss and body composition, but it's central to so many disease pathologies. So understanding what a carb is and learning to pair carbohydrates with proteins and fats, starting to tailor your carbs down to a low glycemic, low carb type approach, and then seeing how your body performs and choosing if you want to dip your toe into the pool of ketosis or dive right in. And that, and only at that time, is when you can look at shifting your timing of eating and your frequency, delving into fasting and some of those other tools that otherwise set you for metabolic dysfunction.
Absolutely. So don't forget to check out our other resources. We have a keto webinar. We have keto.
It's called Eat Fat, Get Skinny.
There you go. We have Ketosis Podcast as well as Optimal Eating Podcast. We have a virtual class under Books and Programs on the AMRD, which is AllieMillerRD.com website, that is all about optimal eating. We'll show you Allie in her kitchen making green smoothies, and it's got handouts. It's very interactive.
Frittatas, salad dressings from scratch, and exactly the foundations of starting with clean eating, which we feel like you should all be applying by now. Yes.
Yeah, that's the best place to start for anyone that's new. Go to Optimal Eating, check that out, and that's a great launch pad into all these conversations.
Yeah. So hopefully today we shed some light on the difference of ketosis versus low glycemic. We talked about the variance of when you would eat high fat versus moderate fat, or high protein versus moderate protein, and how low carb and very low carb we can be based on the variance of the two. And I think the biggest take homes, like I said, the first one I would say is it all starts with quality. Qualitative food is how you nourish your body. So eating clean, single ingredients is the first take home. The second one would be defining the carbs, as we mentioned, and that low glycemic, and focusing on playing with frequency if you transition into ketosis. And if you are going to play with ketosis, ensure that you can commit to it for at least a 6-week period of time. That's because really you're going to have some dibble and dabble in and out of it in the first 2 to 3 weeks with some human error and oopses. And you won't be able to really experience that keto adaptation to understand if this is for you until probably about that third, fourth week or so. And then really to determine whether you want to stay and maintain and see the results of what ketosis can do for you, or if you're more of a low glycemic type of individual. And both can be the right fit. Just different flavors to try. So until next time, you guys, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished Podcast. Visit our blog at AllieMillerRD.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.